So we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 13, Text 2. Satam ayam sarap vritam nisargo. Yadartha vani shruti chetasamapi. Pratikshanam na vyavad achyutasya yat. Striya vitanam iva sadhu varta. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Paramhansas, translation. Paramhansas, devotees who have accepted the essence of life are attached to Krishna in the core of their hearts, and He is the aim of their lives. It is their nature to talk only of Krishna at every moment, as if such topics were newer and newer. They are attached to such topics just as materialists are attached to topics of women and sex. Purport. The word Sarabhritam means paramhansas. The hans or swan accepts milk from a mixture of milk and water and rejects the water. Similarly, the nature of persons who have taken to spiritual life and Krishna consciousness, understanding Krishna to be the life and soul of everyone, is that they cannot give up Krishna Katha or topics about Krishna at any moment. Such paramhansas always see Krishna within the core of the heart. Santa sadaiva hridayeshu vilokayanti. Kam, desires, krodh, anger, and bhay, that is fear, are always present in the material world. But in the spiritual or transcendental world, one can use them for Krishna. Kamam Krishna Karmarpane, the desire of the Paramhansa, therefore, is to act always for Krishna. Krodham Bhakta Dveshi Jane, they use anger against the non-devotees and transform bhay, or fear, into fear of being deviated from Krishna consciousness. In this way, the life of a Paramhansa devotee is used entirely for Krishna, just as the life of a person attached to the material world is used simply for women and money. What is day for the materialistic person is night for the spiritualist. What is very sweet for the materialist, namely women and money, is regarded as poison by the spiritualist. Sandarshanam vishayinam atha yoshitam cha hahanta hanta visha bhakshanato pi asaudhu. This is the instruction of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. For the Paramhansa, Krishna is everything, but for the materialist, women and money are everything. So, from yesterday, in this new chapter, we've heard that the great devotees, the Paramhansas, they relish these pastimes as if it is fresher and newer every time. It is also said that in the purport by Srila Prabhupada that it is really only for the advanced devotees, and that is a sign of advancement, that they not only never tire, but actually the desire keeps growing more and more. And therefore, the qualities that are needed to pursue the path of the Paramhansas, not only the instructions but also studying from their lives, is really the life and soul of a sincere devotee. Because actually the devotee, we cannot progress in spiritual life by any other means except one, and that is to attract the causeless mercy of the Lord. And that mercy of the Lord will come only if we please His devotees. So actually anything that we do is only with the motive of pleasing the paramahansas, the pure devotees of the Lord. If they are pleased, then Krishna is pleased. And if Krishna is pleased, then by His causeless mercy, he can do anything. And whatever He does, of course, is for our benefit. So, but then He will take loving care completely, especially for His devotees. So, as far as these pastimes are concerned, we have these, from our point of view, I'm saying from my point of view, we hear, you know, when we hear pastimes, we like to, when we read a Krishna book or any story from Chaitanya Charitamrita or Bhagavatam, we may hear 2-3 times, then we say something new we need. You know, then we want to hear something more, something else. This is the tendency of, you know, because of a neophyte nature, that we want to go from one to the other because we do not have that taste and we do not actually see Krishna within every syllable, every word, like Maharaj Parikshit is demonstrating by going through 7 days at a stretch, 24 by 7, without a break, without any stoppage for lunch time, dinner time, water, nothing. It's just virtually, unblinkingly just savoring this taste. So, the answer to us, or the solution for us is that we have to just pursue sincerely on the same path that we, and gradually as the anarthas are reduced or eliminated, then we will start developing the taste. But that consistency is the key. It cannot be a stop-start situation. And actually we do see that we do relish the pastimes, we really enjoy it. We may not have the same taste as to that level yet, but it is very relishable. Even the gopas and the gopis, when they are bewildered, when Nanda and Yashoda are bewildered, that also gives us, we are also amazed like they are amazed. For instance, when the cowherd men, it is quite amazing that how they are chastising Krishna, Nanda Maharaj. Because they are saying that, Nanda Maharaj, you are chastising Krishna, you are taking a stick to beat him, you are punishing him, you don't know his position, he has done so much. This is a very offensive attitude. The cowherd men are telling, and actually they are the so-called victims of some of the latest pranks of Krishna. But then somehow when they see Krishna, they are completely transformed. So how can you do like this to Krishna? See, and then they list his activities there. See, he has lifted the Govardhan hill, he has killed Putana, he has destroyed Trinavarta. With his small feet, he has knocked down the Shaktasur demon, the cart. How can such a small child drag the grinding mortar through between the two trees? The celestial demigods are coming to worship him. He's killed Bakasur, Agasur, so many. So you should learn to respect Krishna. This is what Nanda Maharaj is being told by, in such a loving way. And Nanda Maharaj in reply tells them that you all think that, because he is blinded by parental affection, he has so much love for his son. It's not just for his son, but it is Krishna. And Krishna has chosen to be Nanda Maharaj, eternally he will have this parental affection. So then Nanda Maharaj replies that how can you all think that he is a great person, maybe he is a yogi or he is some supernatural person. But tell me, the yogis, what are the symptoms? They are supposed to be controlling their anger. Here Krishna has temper tantrums every day. He doesn't get his butter on time, or he doesn't get enough, then he will throw a temper tantrum. And the yogis are supposed to be very self-controlled. And I see him eating butter almost all the time. You know, they're supposed to be honest. When was the last time you heard him give an honest answer? When we hear him, when I see him eating dirt, I ask him, he says, no, I have not eaten, and I can see the dirt. When he goes and steals butter, and then when he's caught red-handed and we ask him, and he tells me that he doesn't, and then he points to Balram and says, somebody else must have done it. So how, where is, you know, these yogis are supposed to be so considerate towards others, para dukha dukhi, and here Krishna is so, that he doesn't get something, then he starts, he will get angry, and then he will urinate on the floor, you know, so, and then while describing this, Nand Maharaj would start laughing. And then he would laugh and laugh and laugh, and then the gopas would also laugh, and then they would cry also. And then eventually they'd forget what they came to complain in the first place, because the whole thing starts when... So this is how... So when we read about this, and similarly with the gopis, you know, it is... We also are... we are also... we are also joined to the cowherd boys and the cowherd girls in their baffle, in their astonishment. When they get baffled, we get baffled. They are also wondering, how is it that on one hand he is doing so much, he displays some supernatural powers, but at the same time he's he when we cuddle him he feels so nice. When we don't give him attention, he starts crying. So, you know, they cannot see they're completely astonished. So this is really the yoga maya that we know, that we heard also a few days ago, and he told about how Krishna, by his yoga maya potency, completely covers that, and mainly for the enhancing the love between his devotees and him. Mother Yashoda tries everything in her powers to try to retain Krishna at home. She feels that, you know, why does he have to go and steal? So she, they had 900,000 cows, so she takes the best 100 cows and gives them the freshest grass, and then their milk is fed to the best 10 out of that 10 cows, and those 10 cows' milk is fed to the best of the 2 cows, and then the best cow's milk, that she takes the cream and then makes the butter and gives it to Krishna, and still Krishna goes and steals, because Krishna actually wants to taste the bhakti, the devotion of the gopis. So actually we can see that we also do have a taste, we do have an enjoyment, but because of the our anathas, we do not have the growing taste as to the extent that Maharaj Parikshit has. But then that is something which is really, as we see in the for the future, as we that's at least our goal for us. It is described that Anant Shesh, you know, even with his thousands of hoods and thousands of mouths, if he was to describe even a single pastime, he will not be able to describe a single pastime even if he was to till the entire end of creation. So it's something which is again a completely amazing statement, that for the billions and hundreds of billions of years, and just one pastime, and this is also what Sukhdev Goswami tells Maharaj Parikshit, that even if you have one pastime, you know, even if one syllable of Krishna is so purifying, so one pastime of Krishna can go on eternally, the taste can keep on growing. But for this, the requirements are many, and a key requirement is that we have so many attachments, so these attachments deprive us from being from coming closer to Krishna, because ultimately we have to develop this detachment, and this the detachment is a key factor, and we also see this from the various examples. Prabhupada gives two contrasting examples. He gave the example of Rupa and Sanatana Goswami. When Prabhupada was actually explaining that how human civilization means that one has to restrain the senses. And in the Vedic system, the sannyasi is given the highest respect. Why? Because it is a very difficult thing to control sex life, and the sannyasi completely abstains from it, and because of that he is given the highest respect. So because he is given high respect, society is balanced and there is harmony, and all the other varnas and ashrams can peacefully coexist. Because the brain, which is compared to the brahminical qualities which the sannyasi demonstrates, can be he's like the leader of the society. He's like the guru actually to the varnashram. So and because of that, so in that context Prabhupada gave the example of Rupa and Sanatan Goswami. Then you know they had so much with them. You know, they were the favorites of the Nawab Hussain Shah, the province of Bengal. One was the prime minister, one was the home minister, and they were so expert in everything, and they were very much the Nawab was so dependent on him, on them, that he shared all his properties with them. So they had magnificent palaces, the finest clothes, the finest foods. And then when they left and went to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, so what did they have? You know, they were sleeping under trees, cold floor. They had they were taking torn clothes and just used clothes, and they were that's it. So at the same time, he gave the story of this high court judge in Kolkata who was a very competent judge, and he was very well respected and earning a lot of money under the British. And but then the Quit India movement came. So he had a very lucrative job which he had to quit because there was social pressure, you know, he had to move out. And then he did get a decent job, a comfortable job, but getting a basic salary under the Indian regime. But then, within 1 year he died. And Prabhupada said that because his mind was so attached to the requirements, the trappings that came with the British job, because he was, of course, the kind of luxuries he had, he couldn't bear the thought of being deprived of it. It was not just the transportation or the wealth thing, but also the prestige and the power, the respect that people would give him. So he died within 1 year. So that time Prabhupada said, but did Rupa and Sanatan Goswami die within 1 year? No. They were in ecstasy. In fact, the ecstasy kept increasing. In spite of their having from a material point of view, more radical change in lifestyle. And you could say literally 180 degrees. While here it was a relative issue, but still the judge could not get used to it. And I have a personal example, experience also of when we had there's a German company called Hext, which was at one time the largest chemical company in the world. And in the 60s and 70s, they had something like 300,000 employees. So the vice chairman of this company, Mr. Kurt Lanz, he was a very, very decent man. And he was a very close friend of my father because we had a collaboration. So, you know, where Hext was the largest company also in India at that time. There had 6 different companies by the 1950s and 60s. So when he would come here, it was really like a viceroy coming. People, you know, even the Germans, you may say they don't have a class system, but that is all bogus. You can see then all the managers and everyone would be at the airport, and you know, they give him the royal treatment. And then so he was used to that. He would go in a private plane everywhere. And when he retired, literally we could see, I saw it in my own eyes, that he was a very tall person and very regal and a very quiet and a gentleman, cultured person. But within 1 year, he had actually shrunk. When we next saw him, within 6 months or a year, literally, you know, his shoulders were shrunk, and you could see he was completely morose, because though he was relatively wealthy, he was comfortable that way. But In that system, there is no personal relation, there is nobody who cares, respects, it was completely nobody. So this power and prestige and all is so critical for them. It's very, very crucial. You know, if they're not recognized and if you're not in that circle, it's very difficult to survive. So though he, of course, lived for a longer time and we had a relationship for till the time he died, but he was a broken man in that sense. You could actually see him physically, you know, shriveling. You could see him completely, and there was, you know, he became very quiet. And whenever he spoke also, he used to mention that how when on the few times when they would visit the headquarters, you know, there were some formalities that they would show. But, you know, it was like virtually people had no time for him. The same person who for 40 years was flying all over the world, you know. So when we see the, from the Shastras, then actually everything that we see, we hear is actually true, and we will each one have examples to see. And then we have Maharaj Parikshit's example. We are talking of a vice chairman of one company. Maharaj Parikshit was the unrivaled emperor of the whole world, and here he is, and he was given a death sentence for a very relatively minor offense. You know, he in a moment of when he was very thirsty, he displayed some very sarcastic gestures, but it was like a playful gesture when he threw the snake, dead snake. And for that, he was given this sentence. And actually, from his point of view, he could easily have put up a very credible defense. You know, if he was to really if he was in a court, supposing in today's world, somebody would sue and say, how can you, how can someone do it and take Krishna to court? If, hypothetically, you know, I'm just giving an example, you can picture, and he would say, Maharaj Parikshit used to call Krishna my Lord, and here in court also they're saying my Lord. And they make, he said, my Lord, see my track record. See what I've done. You know, every citizen is happy. Everybody, and that is true. Every citizen is happy. There is so much prosperity. You know, I have been working for them. I have been with them. And then compared to that, what have I done? Do I deserve this? So he had no thought. Maharaj Parikshit had absolutely, there was no question about it. You know, we would have turned an atheist probably if we were to give in, you know, like this, that there's no God. How can God be there? How can we be so cruel? But Maharaj Parikshit was extremely instantaneously, he immediately just see the sense of discrimination. The minute he got this sentence, the moment he got it, immediately he knew what he had to do. He didn't have to worry, and he must have planned his affairs so well that he didn't have to even spend. Because I sometimes wonder, I said, at least he would have taken 10-15 minutes to give instructions, or okay, now in my absence, this one, this or nothing. It was so well planned that he just instantaneously could take a decision and everything would run without him. That's the hallmark of a leader. So he left everything, went to the bank of the Ganges, and then for 7 days, he was so displaying complete, actually because of his fearlessness, he was completely fearless. So actually because of fearlessness, the Srimad Bhagavatam actually has been given to the entire world for eternity. So really, it is Maharaj Parikshit's example. So he knew that Krishna was the controller, proprietor. He knew that Krishna is the Sarvaloka Maheshwar. He is the Lord of all Lords. And it was not just knowledge, mental knowledge, but he had that deep conviction that this is, every moment he was living by that truth. And this we see in among so many, all the great kings and the leaders who were in their, who had some positions of authority, that never for a moment this was absent from their mind. This was always uppermost in their mind, and everything they did was subservient to that thought, that that the fact that it's ultimately I'm doing it on behalf of someone and I'm only a temporary person. It's like if you've been given a 5-minute responsibility, someone tells you, okay, look, I'm just going and coming, and for 5 minutes, do you mind if you just look after this so nobody comes and steals this chair? So for 5 minutes, and then he comes back and he says, okay, and he'll thank you and you go out. So instead of 5 minutes, we've been given a life just because we don't see the person. So we are so gross that we cannot understand that Krishna is there in so many ways. It just needs intelligence, which has to be purified by a certain process. But because of the absence of that, we are not able to see any signs for a majority of the people, the billions of people, and who have a certain material intelligence, but they cannot have the basic intelligence of actually seeing the signs, and cannot even understand that someone is a proprietor. So here Maharaj Parikshit is so clear that he just leaves, and this is the example, a role model that if anybody, you know, was to see, even from outside, how a combination of extraordinary leadership combined with combined with the highest character displayed at the time of when it was appropriate. So Maharaj Parikshit's test, we'll all be tested. We will also be tested in various ways. We are being tested now, and we'll be having increasing tests. This was for him the final test. And also we should not forget that in Kali Yuga, it's a place of misery. So we don't really have to wait too long for miseries to come. You don't have to, it's not like you'll have 7 years of complete bliss and suddenly you get. No, it's like you're bombarded. That is one good thing that we'll always be reminded. But in Maharaj Parikshit's case, it was not like that. You know, he had hundreds and hundreds of years of perfect rule, where not only everyone was happy, peaceful, till the advent of Kali, when Kali comes. So in that situation, and when Kali also comes, see Maharaj Parikshit's reaction. It was not that he was, come away from, it was like a change, nothing. He again in a moment, when he had to do a service, he was there, he was about to wipe out, he took out his sword and he would have killed Kali. So when it came to his, it took him seconds to do his service, and when the final test came, again it took an instantaneous decision. Immediately he could do that. So that's something which we should be always careful that, and we can do this only when we understand from the scriptures the proper direction that our consciousness should take. This is the process of Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is how we can understand what our real role is. Not just as a one-time understanding, but something which no matter what we are doing today, no matter where we are staying, no matter what our age or sex, this one fact transcends everything, and that we never forget that. So this is the real danger when we say that there's danger at every step. People sometimes think, that danger means that I might get a disease, I might get run over by a car, or something may happen to, I need to watch out. It doesn't mean that. That is the very minor thing. The major danger is that the Krishna consciousness that we have been given, the process that has been given to us and we have started, if that is deprived from us, this is the biggest danger. And that actually Maharaj Parikshit has only one fear, was that. Though he had no reason to fear. Prabhupada had no reason to fear. But yet Prabhupada, when he was in front of Radha Ras Bihari and Giriraj Maharaj was standing behind him, that time he was a brahmachari. And Prabhupada had tears in his eyes, he was crying. So when Giriraj Maharaj asked him, he said, my only prayer is that I don't forget Radha and Krishna. So, which was unthinkable, but that was his humility. Similarly, Maharaj Parikshit had no fear, but his only fear was that I don't forget Krishna. So this danger is we have a much larger reason, a much bigger reason for following this danger, because this danger is live, very much live with us. I mean, it could be, we are always told that spiritual life, Krishna consciousness process, is like a razor's edge. One misstep and we could completely give up and we could be set back. Of course, Krishna will find ways and eventually, but it is really a self-inflicted wound which will take a long time to heal, because it will be a diversion which will then... So that's the real danger, that if we are knocked off the process, there's no tragedy equal to that. So in comparison to Maharaj Parikshit's sense of detachment which he had instantaneously. There is this example which came about 20-30 years ago, I think. I remember reading it when I was started my business. So about this another emperor, and this is the emperor of Japan. So I'm talking of 1980, not the emperor of the world. And he was in his 90s, and by that time he was getting, and emperor of Japan is very much like there's a halo around him. So, but he was respected, but then when he went into his 90s, he was getting senile. So, but he refused to leave his position. And then there were student riots and the riots all over Japan. So he actually sent the army after them to cling to his position. You know, it was such a contrast to see that here you have the emperor of the world who instantaneously could leave everything. And here was the emperor of one country who had just ceremonial position, and he had already outlived by far, but he couldn't even do that. So we can see that actually we shouldn't think that detachment comes easily. Detachment is the toughest thing. I mean, we experience it, and that's something which we should, if we are aware of the dangers of being attached, we have a better chance of developing the detachment. There was this US president also who became the president in his 70s and went on till his 80s, you know, and he was there. So, you know, and even those who retire as in their positions, it's not that they may not be in the news, but in most cases, especially if they've been very successful, they do find ways of, because that's where they earn the most, because then their influence and power and knowledge of the way the things work becomes very useful. We also have Srila Prabhupada's perfect example. We talk of Maharaj Parikshit, and we have Prabhupada's example, which is incredible, where again he it, not see the one stage was when he left Vrindavan, and that itself, as we heard yesterday also, that Vishwarupa Prabhu's class, that how there was no reason for him to leave Vrindavan, absolutely no reason externally. And everyone would have lauded his approach towards being in Vrindavan, and he did this out of compassion, he did it out of his duty to his spiritual master, which was his life and soul. But then, after having got that, after 12 years, when he circled the world 13 times and developed over 108 temples and thousands of sincere, dedicated disciples, when the time came, when he sensed that the time is coming that I have to pass through this world, he very quietly withdrew. He just quietly withdrew, and then for the last several months went to Vrindavan. So he was always heeding Krishna's call. And when he sensed that now my time is up, even though in that sense he was 79, so I mean life expectancy, one can say that, you know, with medication and this and that, you can go into 80s or 90s. Now, just a few days ago I read that in Japan there are 58,000 people who are 100, above 100. But what is the quality of their life? You know, they are non-entities in the last 30-40 years. They may be little better than vegetables perhaps, but you know, they are like trophies in a family, just to say that somebody is there, you know, to show that, okay, my great-grandfather, he has a big tree. But what is the point? Here was Prabhupada when he was 79, 80. You know, he was only connected to Krishna. That was all. Krishna's voice was telling, when he told that, and he was listening to that. So when he had to wrap things up, he did it very quietly and moved to Vrindavan. And then for the last 6-7 months, we know how, it's all on film. We have seen that it is every word, every moment. And even till the last breath, till the last breath, practically when he could say, we can, this is something which not only hearing but seeing, you know, even for our grossest senses, you know, if we can't, sometimes we may hear and say that, okay, out of his, you know, well-intentioned, but he's a little bit exaggerated, we might think. But if you see it on film, you know, just days before he is part, as it is for the last 6 months, he couldn't even walk. His body was a bag of bones. It was, doctor said it must be so painful, only on the bones. And then, but that was 6 months ago. What to speak of days before he left this world. And at that stage, when he is still, you know, the microphone is in his mouth and he's still saying that you are not this body, he's still translating. See, this mental alertness, this consciousness, and this tranquility is something you, how can even the most dullest person, even a child can would see in amazement. There is no, it's just, so the only answer is that if we cannot see it, it is that envy or stubbornness that, or a false ego which becomes prominent. So we have to be, for ourselves, we have to be careful because there are enough distractions around us and these distractions could take us off track anytime. So this process becomes crucial. That's why Prabhupada said that, you know, there are so many institutions in this world, not just educational or medical or social institutions, millions of institutions, but there's not one institution which teaches pure devotional service. Prabhupada would say that just one institution, because that could teach fearlessness. The fearlessness of the way Maharaj Parikshit could face, that he had no fear. And we can only have fearlessness if you are under the shelter of Krishna. And this world is out of fear. If you see, this world is made of fear. Because, first of all, there is a fear of hunger. So you have the food industry. You have fear of housing, shelter. So you have this construction, real estate, and all that. You have fear of health, your old age. So you have the pharmaceutical and the medical industry. You have fear of loneliness. So you have the cosmetic industry, you have the fashion industry, you have the entertainment industry, you have the TV and the radio and things like that. Right? So everything, like you're fearing how your country will be attacked. So you have a defense in industry, which is of course very large in most countries. So you will see that there's always a counter to fear that is being attempted. So this fear is around us, and therefore the Krishna consciousness in its in the real sense, what the process that we are taught is a process of teaching us how to be fearless. And why do we need to look, of course these are the base of what we see, but we don't even need to look that far. We can see even in our life, we are seeing, all of us are experiencing devotees now who are passing out of this world in the most exemplary, sublime way, exactly as Maharaj Parikshit has done. Exactly as Maharaj Parikshit has done, in their own way. And that is also amazing, to understand that whom we thought that, oh, he's just like me. You know, he was, you know, he's had the same kind of background, gone to the school, and, you know, he's also was diverted and distracted, and then he came to Krishna consciousness, and then he, but then at 25, and then he, but we have dozens and dozens and dozens of examples all over the world. One example we, Maharaj, His Holiness Radhana Swami Maharaj, has spoken many times about his god sister Kunti Devi. She was one who, she was just a simple mother. She was not like some of the leaders who, one would say perhaps that, yeah, I can understand because, you know, they were like Sridhar Maharaj, Tamal Krishna Maharaj. I mean, they led an exemplary life and they were of the highest caliber. So it was like a natural progression. I want to say that it is a great sense of awe and pride. But one would still think that it is expected. But in this case, he mentioned this often because she was a nobody of the material world. Just a housewife. She used to go to distribute books. She had so many problems in her life. She had two kids. And actually in many ways, our society had not reciprocated with her in the best of ways. So she had lots of material problems. Practically she was alone. And then she was stricken with this violent cancer. And she was in Utah. She was paralyzed from the waist down. Poverty stricken. So in Utah, she became a celebrity over some time because she was preaching so vigorously that even the television, state television used to interview her because they'd never seen something like this. Someone who's facing death and can actually explain the way our philosophy is explaining. And she's actually going to face that. When she came to New Vrindavan for the last days, because doctor had said that there was only a few months left. And there she... that's when Radhana Swami Maharaj met her, and she had been almost 30-35 years in the movement by then. And Maharaj, of course, knew her from the beginning, but then there was no contact. And when she came there, devotees would go to read for her. And anyone who came in the room, she would just say this, eagerly, tell me about Krishna, tell me about Prabhupada. That was all. Krishna and Prabhupada, just tell me about Krishna and Prabhupada. That was, and in spite of physical pain, and in spite of being paralyzed from the waist down, her consciousness was so strong. And she told, and she could not even lift a book. That was a weakness. But just, that's why devotees had to come. And when devotees would come to cheer her up, you know, they left feeling so much in awe, because she was giving them more, more cheer than what they came to give. And when Radhana Swami had many conversations with her, and he said that, you know, her thinking was of such a extraordinary nature, right out of the scriptures. She was telling Maharaj that, you know, whatever injustices I have done or others have done now, it is of no consequence. Whatever people have done to me, it is of no value. Where am I going to take it? It's all gone. This doesn't count. I have to let go. When we talk of detachment, this the thought process of not only the worries but also the bitterness, the anger, you know, the hatred, etc. All that has to be finished. So here she was demonstrating that, and then she told Maharaj that people think that I am so unfortunate, but actually I am so fortunate. You know, I've got the mercy of of the association and mercy of all these devotees around me. It is of the, it is beyond my imagination to even think how lucky and fortunate I am. And I am hearing my Guru Maharaj constantly, and I have been reading his books for the last 25 years, because she was a book distributor. I have been reading my Guru Maharaj's book for the last 25 years, but it is only now that actually I am linked to him, and it's as if he's speaking only to me. And every word that I read, I feel it is only for me. Now, you must remember that when you are, these can be, in a lecture one can say the nicest things, and all. But when you are on your deathbed, the least, that is one certainty, wherever, whoever we are, when you are on your deathbed, the least concern is about how you look or how you sound or whom you are. There is no facade left. There is no formalities, no niceties left. It is straight as you feel. And generally then you are into various anxieties. And here is a person who was actually talking about the highest truths, saying how fortunate she is that she is actually experiencing Prabhupada, and she is saying, I have never felt more intimate to my Guru Maharaj. And this is what Prabhupada used to say about his Guru Maharaj. So you can see how parampara works, and how the process works. And she said that people feel that I have nobody around me, but actually, people feel that I am going to soon die. But I don't see that. I don't see that actually. I am not on my deathbed. I am on the bank of the Ganges. This is what she said. This is what we hit, that I am on the. I am just. I feel like I am like Maharaj Parikshit, and I am hearing from my Guru Maharaj. Through him, hearing all the scriptures. So a person, moments before leaving this world, can experience that, and who it is in our lifetime. It is somebody from that same kind of, you know, environment that we are all used to, similar environment, can achieve. And this is just one example. And just to wind up with, so we have this example, and the last I would like to end with what his Grace Gaur Gopal Prabhu had mentioned about a week ago. 2 weeks ago, he gave another example of an astonishing devotee in Moscow, Purna Pragyat Prabhu. He said that this devotee in Moscow was also terminally ill. And when he was in his last days, last moments, so right through the process of his sickness, the doctors were amazed at how he is constantly smiling. Because actually it was a very painful, physically painful disease. And then at the time of his departure, the last words that he spoke, now again we must remember that when somebody speaks, it is coming straight from the heart. It is not from the mind, it is really from the heart. And this is the very last words that he spoke, just moments before he left this world. All the devotees were around him, kirtan and all that. And he just put his finger up, his thumb, to say that, it's all fine. And the words he said were, "It works. It works," meaning the process works. So he's summarizing the entire Krishna conscious life that he had and what we have in two words. It works. And then he said, Prabhupada is not cheating us. So if somebody, usually the last most important thoughts are left with us when we are departing. And this was what he wanted to convey to all of us. Many others would have wanted to, but he actually spoke the last words that it works. Prabhupada is not cheating us. So we get this, if we need any reassurance and reassurance and reassurance, this is it. We can look. Now everything is up to us. So if we simplify our life and if we take this kind of comfort of the that there's a guarantee. Krishna has said it, Prabhupada has said it, devotees are saying it. There's a guarantee that the process works. It's just that we have to straighten ourselves up. Just keep on introspecting and seeing where we are going wrong, what is our problem. If we have stumbled, get up and walk. So that process involves also, introspection involves taking advice. Sometimes it's humiliating, sometimes it's difficult, but we cannot ignore it. And this is the only sure shot process of actual happiness also, which our soul is seeking. So I'll stop here. Any questions? Any comments? Granth Raj, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.